Greetings to everyone. We are live on Corabi Radio for our first broadcast for the month of November 2015. Today is November 7th. And this time we take you to Portland, Oregon, where our fellow guest, Carly Samish, she's standing by. She will be joining us in a few minutes. We'd like to remind everyone our email address and to send in your questions. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to address your questions that you may have about today's lecture or comments. Join us on Facebook or send us an email. You can do so at coraviradio@gmail.com. And also to let you guys know that our new downloads section for the previous month's lecture are now available. Also, we have our new playlist for the month of November. So if you haven't done so, you can listen and join us anytime throughout the month to listen to last month's lectures or download the previous month's lectures in the MP3 archive section. As usual, we greet our connections from all over. I'll go from the last connection. We have Saratoga Springs. We have Boston Spa. We have Festus. These are United States. And then we take you to Sydney, Australia. Take you to Brunswick. And we go to Austin, United States. Syracuse, Fort Lauderdale. We have Romania. Hello, Romania. And Seattle. Portland, San Jose, California. San Luis Obispo, California. Welcome. Del Mar, California. And many more that will be joining us. Welcome all to today's program. So we have the Astrological Ages and the New Era of Aquarius from Portland, Oregon. Carly Samish. Welcome, Carly. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Thank you so much for having me on the show again.
Welcome back, I should say. Last year was in September. So good to have you back on.
Thank you. All right, well, I'll just get started. So thank you so much for the introduction, Elio and Annabelle. And thank you so much for having me here on Karate Radio. I'm Carly Samish, and I'm from Portland, Oregon, with the Gnostic Society Sun Island Vior. So today I'd like to talk about the Age of Aquarius, which Samael Onvior spoke and wrote about quite a bit. And he was known as the Avatar of Aquarius, meaning that he was the one who brought in or ushered in this Age of Aquarius, and his particular teachings strike a keynote related to this time. So it's really nice to kind of go into what this age means. And then I like to give some context by going back and talking about some of the previous ages. Since Samael spoke a little bit, or he wrote about the age of Pisces, which was the previous age, but not too much about the other one. So this is a little bit of a topic of Gnostic anthropology, but I think it's very applicable. So I'll also be talking about the two zodiacs, which Master Samael wrote about in his books. So we can kind of talk about what an astrological age is, what that means. And then we'll go through not all of the ages, but some of them, and we'll start in the age of Gemini, then Taurus, Aries, Pisces, and Aquarius. And we can see the progression of how these civilizations and the religions and the cultures of each age kind of plants the seed for the next one, or creates a basis for the next age. And then we'll spend some more time in Aquarius in particular, since it's an important part of our Gnostic doctrine, and it's also part of our basic curriculum in our Gnostic centers, actually, is to at least touch on the Age of Aquarius. So what the zodiac is 12 signs in a wheel, and the zodiac is related to the word zoo, so it's 12 animals, or almost all of the creatures on there are animals. And when we study the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, we see that all of the Sephiroth, all of the Sephiroth except for Keter, are associated with a planet, but Chokmah, which is the cosmic Christ, is associated with the zodiac itself. And this is really interesting. So again, the zodiac is 12 signs, and 12 is the number that is the process that all things must go through. They must endure in order to have a completion, a unity, or a crystallization. So the zodiac itself, up there in Chokmah, represents the path that a soul must take to be fully realized and for the Christ force itself to live. The zodiac we can see represented as the 12 apostles with Christ at the center. So when anything, when a celestial body, a planet, or even a whole solar system goes around the entire zodiacal belt, and the zodiacal belt is composed of stars from other galaxies, so when a celestial body goes through this entire zodiac process, it receives influence from all the signs of the zodiac and it completes the cycle. So whenever we're talking about astrology or cosmology, we're always kind of talking about cycles within cycles. So there are two cosmic cycles or years that Master Samael describes, the terrestrial and the sidereal year. And I'm just going to touch on this a little bit. It can get sort of technical sometimes with the astrology of this, but I just want to give the basics so we can understand the ages. So the terrestrial year is what we're familiar with the Earth's movement around the sun, and it takes approximately 365 days and has the four seasons that we know, spring, summer, autumn, and winter. And the sidereal year, or it's sometimes called the Platonic year, is the movement of our solar system called Ors, and it's our movement of our solar system around the great star Alcyone, and it takes approximately 25,968 terrestrial years for the entire orbit. So each astrological age is about 1/12 of that orbit. So each astrological age lasts about 2,000 years, 2,160 years, something like that. They're not all exactly the same. So so we have the year, the terrestrial year of the sun passing through each sign once a month, and we have the sidereal year, which is our whole solar system traveling around Alcyone and receiving the influence of the different zodiacal signs on a much larger scale for a much longer time. And when we look at some of the patterns of the ages, it's really interesting because the zodiacal sign of each age really embodies the spirit or the message or just the flavor of the dominant civilizations and cultures and religions of that particular time. So there are four seasons in the sidereal year, just as there are in the terrestrial, and each season will consist of three astrological ages, so it's approximately 6,000 years for each season. The spring season is called the Golden Age, or the Satya Yuga in the Vedic tradition, and this is a time of great peace and unity. Divinity is very close to humans, and we have harmony that reigns on the earth, the Golden Age. The summer season is called the Silver Age of the Treta Yuga, and we start to see some degeneration. So this is just the natural cycle. And there's those seeds of selfishness and pride and separation from divinity, although probably in the Silver Age we would still consider it a paradise of cooperation and divine influence, kind of compared to what we see now. In the autumn season, and it's called the Copper or the Bronze Age, the Dwapar Yuga, there's consciousness begins to sleep much more and lose touch with nature and divinity. Finally, there's the winter season called the Iron Age or the Kali Yuga. And here we have total degeneration. We have the pollution of earth, air, water, and fire, which is both internal and external, and widespread materialism, greed, selfishness, violence, etc. So because of this, at the end of every sidereal year, at the end of the Kali Yuga, there's a great catastrophe. And the earth is purified by the four elements so that a new golden age can begin. And there's definitely lots of other talks about this. Master Samael wrote quite a bit about the catastrophe in the golden age. And, there are different factors determining how and when and where it happens. But it's part of the natural cycle. So it's worth mentioning. And in this particular sidereal year, the great catastrophe will occur in the age of Aquarius. So again, that's why I'm touching on it. And that is why Samael Onbiur came in this era to give his gospel and to do his mission and to unveil the teachings that are the most helpful for those souls living in this time period. So Master Samael teaches that we are in the age of Aquarius now, which is sometimes sort of debated in astrology circles that we are or we not, but we definitely are. And Master Samael is very clear about that. And the particular qualities of the sign of Aquarius give us a lot of clues about the nature of the spiritual work that takes place now. And you know, each age had their own signature, their own contribution for humanity, their own lesson for humanity. But we can't expect to work in a spiritual or esoteric way in the same way that someone 5,000 years ago would work in a completely different age. So even though Gnosis is universal across time and space, there still are particular ways that are culturally relevant and relevant for the people of the times to be able to do the work and to understand it. Just a quick note on the astrological ages. They run backwards through the zodiac cycle. So, and this is sort of signifying their cosmic scale that affects all of humanity rather than other zodiacal cycles that run forward. It's just another sort of technical thing. So just in case it's not confusing. So from example, the age of Aries, we would go into Pisces and then Aquarius when we're talking about the ages. So, like I mentioned, we'll start just with the age of Gemini. Not going to talk about every age, but this is a very early part of human history as we generally understand it. And this is during the Copper Age, or the autumn season of this current sidereal year. So the age of Gemini is the sign of the twins, and the approximate dates for this are 6840 BC to 4320 BC, so pretty early history, or even like prehistory. Gemini is an air sign, and it's ruled by the planet Mercury. It's the archetype of the twins and related to communication, writing, logic, and the interaction between duality. So this time period was characterized by the emergence of writing, agriculture, trade, and organized religion. And many of the scriptures and legends of that era, we see the theme of twins and dualism or duality. So I have a few quotes here from the Zendavesta, which is part of the sacred text of Zoroastrianism. I have this quote. "Now the two primal spirits who reveal themselves in vision as twins are the better and the bad in thought and word and action. Between these two, the wise ones choose aright, the foolish not so." And from the Egyptian Book of the Dead, "Behold, the Lord of the One Face is with me. Hail thou who art victorious, thou Lord of the divine twin, gods who livest in the divine twin, gods. Strengthen thou me according as thou strengthen thyself, and thou thyself upon earth. O thou that returnest and withdrawest thyself, and let thy will be done." And finally, from the epic poem of India, the Mahabharata, we see, "There were in former days celebrated throughout the three worlds, two brothers named Sunda and Upasunda, living together and incapable of being slain by anybody unless each slew the other. They ruled the same kingdom, lived in the same house, slept on the same bed, sat in the same seat, and ate from the same dish. Of exactly the same disposition and habits, they seemed to be one individual divided into two parts." So we see a lot of references to the twins from the religions here in this era. In the Greek legends, we find the semi-divine twins, Castor and Pollux, and also Romulus and Remus, who were credited with founding Rome, the city of Rome. We see that writing began during this age of Gemini in pictographs in China and India, in cuneiform in Sumeria and hieroglyphs in Egypt. And the great Sumerian epic Gilgamesh has been dated to this time period. So civilizations began to be distinguished more by travel and intermingling with other cultures, trade, and commerce. And these are themes that are all very much related with Gemini and Mercury, the ruling planet. We also see the polar opposite astrological sign is always present in any given age. So during the ages, there's always a strong characteristic of the sign, and then also indications of the opposite sign. So the opposite sign of Gemini is Sagittarius, which is related with philosophy, religion, and priesthood. And it was during this time, this age, that the many organized religions began to be established. So that's our sort of prehistorical age in Gemini. And then we move into the age of Taurus. Taurus is the bull. And this was from about 4320 BC to 2160 BC. Taurus is an earth sign, and it's ruled by the planet Venus. And it governs fertility, wealth, agriculture, and land. And it's the most earthy sign, I would say. It's stable, fixed, and concerned with matter and earthly life. So during this age, we see that it was agricultural civilizations that reached their peak, civilizations based on the earth. We see the Mesopotamian civilizations created money and a system of banking and established the great ziggurats. The Egyptian civilization was provided with the rich soil for agriculture by the regular flooding of the Nile River. And what's really interesting is we start to see the bull god featured in so many civilizations in that time. So in Greece, we see the Minotaur, the story of Io, who was turned into a cow by the god Zeus, the Zoroastrian sacred bull of Mitra, the Assyrian great bull called Ashur, and the winged bull was called a Lamassu in ancient Chaldea. We see the great Christ god of India, Krishna, was depicted as a cowherd, and the Egyptian Christ god Osiris was depicted with a bull's head during the age of Taurus, and it was called Apis, but then later in the age of Aries, he was depicted with a ram's head and called the god Khnum. The opposite sign of Taurus is Scorpio, which is the sign related to death, resurrection, sexuality, transformation, and immortality. So on a basic physical level, this is an earth and a water sign. We see the interplay of the earth, the Taurus, and the water of Scorpio. And again, what I mentioned with the whole civilization was based on the cyclical periodic flooding of the Nile. And the Nile would flood, the waters would overflow, and when it receded back, there would be rich, fertile soil for the basis of their agriculture. So we see this with the Taurus and Scorpio, but we also see Scorpio in the deep mythology of death and the afterlife in Egypt, with the elaborate tombs of the kings and all kinds of stuff. The prominence of that Ankh symbol of immortality and the scarab symbol of death and resurrection. Now, the scarab itself is actually another symbol for Scorpio. And we also see these themes really interestingly in the story of the god Osiris, who was killed and cut into 13 parts and thrown in the Nile River. And he was retrieved by the goddess Isis, but only when the 13th piece was found, which was the phallus, was he able to fully resurrect. So these are all really deep Scorpio themes that we see during the age of Taurus. So I think we're getting a sense of some of the sort of themes that are going on through the ages. I'm going to keep going. So Aries, the next age is Aries, which is the ram. And that was from 2160 BC to year 0 AD. Aries is a fire sign. It's ruled by the planet Mars. So while in Taurus we saw the civilizations related to agriculture reach their peak, now we see the civilizations related to the military start to reach their peak. So one of the characteristics of this sign is it's driven, ambitious, and individualistic. It's also the archetype of the solar hero, who is that person, that singular person that battles and overcomes obstacles to achieve their goal. And interestingly, we see the journey from the age of Taurus to the age of Aries in the story of Exodus. And with the prophet Moses leading the Hebrews or the Israelites out of Egypt. So Moses was a Hebrew, but he was orphaned and raised in the house of Pharaoh. So we take that to understand from Gnosis that he was actually initiated into the Egyptian mysteries. So the transition from Taurus to Aries was all sort of part of the story. So Moses was almost symbolically initiated into that age of Taurus with the Egyptian mysteries and the house of Pharaoh, but then he left with the Israelites and they wandered in the desert. And at one point, Moses finds some of his people worshiping a golden calf, and he rejects it as idolatry. And this is just, you know, a Bible story we hear a lot. But we can understand that the calf is Taurus, the bull, and Moses is rejecting it. He calls in the keynote of Aries with the blowing of the shofar, which is a ram's horn. And we also see that that polarity sign, the opposite of Aries is Libra, which is the law, the scales of justice. And we see that with Moses bringing down the Ten Commandments from Lord Jehovah on Mount Sinai. So that's a very strong Libra influence during that age. The age of Aries brought in the age of iron and the Kali Yuga. The iron is also the metal related with the planet Mars. So we start to see that there were a lot of great wars during this time and the expansion of empires with strong militaries that fought to conquer other lands. The Roman Empire expanded to what we now consider to be most of the modern Western world. In China, we have the Shang and Chou dynasties, which were powerful militaries, and they overthrew the previous peaceful dynasty called the Longshan and ruled for many hundreds of years. We start to see in the Greek and Roman mythology and in religion, they're starting to celebrate the Olympic ideals. Again, that solar hero, Aeneas, Odysseus, Jason, Hercules, and showing that virtue of individuality, casting off the kind of the stagnation or the too much stability of the old Taurus age. So we see that Judaism came out of the Egyptian culture with Moses, and Christianity came out of the Hebrew culture with Jesus. So it's all, it all kinds of builds on itself. No religion really comes out of a vacuum, or civilization for that matter, but it's particularly interesting to sort of see that particular pathway. So Jesus, you know, we know was a Jew, a Hebrew, and he was initiated into the esoteric Kabbalistic mysteries. And he used the language and the rituals of Judaism, such as the Passover Seder, which is quite an ancient Jewish ritual celebrated in the spring. And he used that ritual as a basis to introduce that that really tremendous moment of the first unction. So he, you know, just celebrated the Passover as any Jewish person would at that time, but he used that opportunity to introduce the Christic force into the bread and the wine, and first with his disciples. So it was really quite a tremendous moment in the history of our world, really. You know, but it was meant as both symbolic, but also a genuine shift in the amount of the accessibility of the Christ force for humans, for people. So he brought it as a grace to bring the Christic force into the world, help suffering humanity. And part of his mission, among other things, was to raise the ethical octave of the Old Testament laws. So we have the law of Talion, which is an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. It's written in the Old Testament. But he changed it to the laws of mercy and forgiveness. But he did it out of that matrix. Jesus was martyred by the Jewish establishment of the time and also the Roman political leaders. So again, he was bringing in the age of Pisces at a great price, the transcendent spiritual teachings, bringing it to people at the end of the age of Aries. So the age of Pisces begins in year zero, what we call, so during the time of Christ, to 1962 AD. Pisces is the fish, and Pisces is a water sign, and it's ruled by the planets Jupiter and Neptune. It signifies that mysterious great ocean which dissolves all forms and structures. Pisces is a sign of mysticism and transcendent and spiritual yearnings. Its sign is the two fish swimming in opposite directions, one towards the great universal oneness and the other towards escapism and sleep. During this age of Pisces, we see that Rome, which was the key civilization on the Western world of the Aries age, it was unified, but it was starting to degenerate, and it began its long fall during this time. In India, we see that in Hinduism, where they had previously been worshiping warrior gods such as Agni during the age of Aries, they instead started to worship and elevate the transcendent gods, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, which we know as the Holy Trifecta, or the Holy Trinity. So this age, as we know, is characterized by the rise and establishment of Christianity, which emphasized the Piscean qualities of sacrifice, humility, solitary reflection, and transcendent mysticism. We also see Buddhism, Taoism, and Confucianism in East Asia, and Islam throughout the Middle East carried these similar values, these same values. And there are many associations with Jesus and the early Christian movement and the fish. We see it in, you know, different stories in the Bible and the Gospels. There's the miracle of the loaves and fishes. We see the fishermen, Simon and Andrew, and whom Jesus made fishers of men. In Corinthians, Jesus tells the sign of Jonah, and he describes the fish, and he uses this to foreshadow his own resurrection, as Jonah was 3 days in the belly of the whale and came out changed to be a prophet. So Jesus is foreshadowing his own process. The opposite sign of Pisces, the polarity, is Virgo, the Virgin. And the sign is related with chastity and purity. And of course, we find this in the beautiful, in that cult, that worshipful love of the Divine Mother Mary, of the Virgin Mary. The name Jesus is related with the Greek word for fish, which is ichthys. And Mary, the name, is from Maris, which is the sea. So we see that Jesus, the fish, is born of Mary, the sea. Jesus taught sexual chastity and sublimation of the sexual energies with symbolically with when he did the miracle of turning water into wine. So we see the normal waters of life are turned into a transubstantiated mystical substance. The teachings of the mysteries of sexual alchemy are contained within the ritual of the Last Supper and with his crucifixion. And he taught his disciples these mysteries openly, but for the rest, he just left the teachings in symbols and parables. But it was still foreshadowing the Aquarian age where they would be completely unveiled by our master Samael and Vior. So eventually, as is part of the natural way of things, Christianity degenerated into celibacy and monastic life. So religious and mystical love were separated from sexuality, degenerating away from a loving, a devotional approach to sexuality into kind of a repression and with some tragic results at times. Buddhism also became mostly celibate and monastic, and Islam indoctrinated oppression of women. So as Christianity degenerated, what was lost was the connection to the real path of the Christ. And so we got more of these flavors of kind of the shadow side or the negative side of Pisces, which is this kind of isolation and, just wanting to sort of escape the material world and escape the normal things of life and find spirituality and mystical union that way. So, but what we want is the possibility of individual incarnation of the Christ force. That's the true meaning of Christ's teachings. So it became time for a new era to bring a revolutionary teaching that was complete and didn't exclude parts of the human experience or factions of the human race that anyone can do. So Samael and Vior teaches that the age of Pisces is over. And I think I mentioned before in some astrology circles, this is still sort of up for debate, but it's pretty clear that we've entered into the age of Aquarius. And so Samael says that with the age of Pisces over, we're also done with the backwards way of approaching sexuality with hatred and fear. And Samael himself, he says this in one of his books, and I always thought this was so interesting. He actually changed his personal astrology sign from Pisces to Aquarius. So he was born a Pisces, but through his work and through his incarnation of his being, overcoming his own karma, He changed it. And then it's also, of course, symbolic because he is officially changing our age from Pisces to Aquarius and bringing in the Aquarian teachings. So the sign of Aquarius, this is the water bearer, and we've been in this age from 1962 until the present. Aquarius is an air sign, and it's ruled by the planet Saturn and Uranus. The planet Saturn, it's also called Chronos, and it's related with time and also the end of times, with limitations, karma, aging, and death. And Uranus is the planet related with revolutionary change, inventions, high technology, and futuristic utopian vision. And also in some astrology circles, Uranus is associated more with Prometheus, who was the Greek champion of mankind who delivered fire that was a divine fire only for the gods, but he kind of stole it and delivered it for humans to use. So this is very much in relation to these themes of Aquarius and Uranus. So Samael and Vior states in a number of his books that the age of Aquarius started when all the planets aligned in Aquarius on February 4th, 1962, between 2 and 3 in the afternoon. So we can look at an astrology map. We can just go on the computer and type in that information. And it's true, all of the seven principal planets are in Aquarius at that time. And this is a very rare occurrence. It's a very rare astrological occurrence. So so it does make sense that that was the gong that struck to bring in the age of Aquarius. Also, interestingly, there's some evidence that the same thing happened around the birth of Christ in Pisces. All the planets aligned in Pisces. So this Age of Aquarius, it's characterized by new inventions, technological advances, and drastic changes, and rejection of old hierarchy and oppression, and a love of humanity and equality. And we can really see these kinds of changes culturally since the 1960s, culturally, socially, with technology, with the environment, just so much change, exponential change that just keeps getting faster and faster since, you know, it's hard to pin down exactly that time, but, you know, when that those drastic changes started, but certainly since the early 1960s, it makes a lot of sense. So the religion of this age, it must be a religion of humankind, and that is inclusive and includes an individual relationship to God without that necessity of a priestly intervention. Master Samael's mission was to create solar men and solar women through the teachings of Gnosis. And we've probably heard that Gnosis means self-knowledge or direct knowledge. The psychologist Carl Jung, he said that Gnosis would be the religion of the future. It's kind of interesting. I don't think he knew about Samael and Bjor, it was before his time, but just Gnosis, self-knowledge would be the religion of the future that people needed. The opposite sign of Aquarius is Leo, and we can understand this in our time as the lion of the law. Leo indicates the influence of the heavy karma of these times and the increase in laws, both the earthly laws, just there's more laws in general in our lives now, and also the esoteric laws. Leo is ruled by the sun and related with gold, so it also gives us the key to what we need for our revolution. We need the solar force, we need that gold of the essence, we need the gold of the internal and cosmic Christ, we need the strength and power of the lion to work with the law of karma and to pay our debts with love. So Master Samael talked about what he called the Dionysian wave, and this, the Age of Aquarius initiated the Dionysian wave in the 1960s. Dionysus was the Greek god of grapes, wine, states of ecstasy, and inebriation. And what the Dionysian wave did in the 1960s, it became sort of a worldwide, almost sort of strong cultural rejection of Mammon. And Mammon is what we'd understand as the demon of materialism, intellectualism, wars, greed, just materialism, material life. And so this Dionysian wave was a yearning for a revolution and a renewal of the connection to nature and to the divine and to those just ecstatic states of innocence that felt like it had been lost in the world at that time. But this wave, this Dionysian wave, had two poles. So there was the counterculture movement, which was one pole, the hippies, and then the modern Gnostic movement. Samael's Gnostic movement. With the countercultural movement, we had the hippies and the beats and so forth. And this was mostly an external movement looking to change society without changing themselves internally. So the counterculture movement worked at it to break down social norms and facilitate all kinds of revolutions and also to introduce spiritual teachings along with experimentation with drugs and sexuality and music and art. And this really was part of a natural part of the new Aquarian influence and just kind of a necessary aspect of the Dionysian influence, disrupting the old ways of rigid materialistic thinking. It was just a natural wave. But unfortunately, the counterculture movement in and of itself didn't have the keys to build and sustain a real utopian society. So it opened some doors for positive change, but it also planted seeds for all kinds of psychological breakdown, social confusion, and spiritual chaos and confusion. The Gnostic movement, with its headquarters in Mexico City at this time, started to gain momentum with the publication of Samael Onvior's The Perfect Matrimony. And this book openly revealed the teachings of the sexual mysteries of transmutation. And this book truly was revolutionary, and it went against the social mores of that time really strongly. And so Master Samael was even briefly imprisoned because of writing that book. So it was very shocking to many people. And the Gnostic movement overcomes materialism, it overcomes Mammon, materialism and intellectualism, with our esoteric discipline, with psychological meditation and upright sexuality, thereby harnessing the same Dionysian wave, but with the inebriation of spiritual ecstasy. With the revolutionary Aquarian teachings of Gnosis, we understand that fighting against the system just makes us part of the system, and it's better to dissolve the system within ourselves and to do this work internally, have an internal revolution. So, such interesting times to be living in, and we wonder why, what is the significance of living in this age, and why are we here working now in these times? So the Gnostic movement we have today is a direct teaching from Samael Melchior, and his mission was to make the Gnostic teachings available during this age. So just to go back to talking about the influence of Uranus, that Uranian influence is, I would say, it's most characterized in the internet. I think the internet age would make our world almost unrecognizable to someone from 200 years ago, because it's just it just makes our world so different. And so one of the wonderful things about it is we have all the knowledge of the world online, all the great art and music and scriptures just available to us. We can communicate with people all over the world. And this is an Aquarian ideal of equality, of knowledge for everyone. You know, certainly it's a materialistic manifestation of it, and there's absolutely a dark side, but it's just as a broad archetype, it's very Aquarian. But the Saturn influence at the time also brings a heaviness in the materialism, and there's an increase in the force and the weight of matter and the force and the weight of the hypnosis of just the world. And there becomes this tension between the power of extreme change and the rigidity of the past and of how things have always been. The esoteric teachings within these aspects, are the Gnostic teachings of sexual transmutation and sublimation. So Uranus influences and rules the endocrine and sexual glands, which are related to the chakras of the human body. So we know that we can transform ourselves radically through sexual transmutation, and this is the highest application of the influence of Uranus. So with this planet quite elevated during this age, we know that this is the work that we have to do, and it's most advantageous to be transmuting and changing ourselves on a radical, deep level, you know, in terms of the endocrine system and the sexual glands, you know, trying to elevate and sublimate our sexual force. Saturn, the planet Saturn, reminds us of mystical death. So just to die to our old ways, our old conditioned ways of thinking, feeling, and acting. Death is the crown of everyone, and we must die in every moment. So again, just take maximum advantage of this influence of Saturn to die and leave behind the conditioned ego. Aquarius is the water bearer, and it gives wisdom to suffering humanity. There's no hierarchy, no bishops, or there's no Gnostic pope. Every person has their own internal god, their own mother, their own father, their own internal guru to guide them. And this is a teaching of an individuality, of a radical individuality, of every person has their own god, their own being. Of course, the discovery of our own being within ourselves leads us to a great unity with and love for all beings. So at the same time, this is not a selfish individual path of isolation. It's a great communion with others and a great love for all beings. And we understand too that we progress the more we love others. It's beautiful. So I just want to finish with a really beautiful quote from Master Samael Melchior. "I sincerely long that the inner star that guides each one of you finally leads you all to the blessings. I sincerely long that this Gnostic people, based on intentional sacrifices, conscious efforts, and voluntary sufferings, finally arrive to real liberation. May all of you here present never forget the esoteric work. May all sincerely, in truth, dedicate themselves to work on themselves here and now. For if any be a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like unto a man beholding his true face in a mirror, and as soon as he beholds himself, he turns his back and goes away. Thus, brothers and sisters, it is not enough to be a true hearer of the word. It is necessary to be a doer of the word. Thus, as we fight more and more, we will receive inner help. I want you to know that the inner Christ comes to you when indeed we have untiringly worked night and day." So that is the end of the talk part of this. Thank you all so much for listening. And I'm sending you all blessings here from Portland. So I think it's the time where I can take some questions or some comments about the talk.
Yes, we invite all listeners to send us your questions at this time. We will take a short break and we'll be right back on Corali Radio. And welcome back to Corali Radio with questions from the astrological ages and the new era of Aquarius for Carly Samish. We took a break and we got a few questions from the Gmail and the Facebook chat. So we thank you all for sending us your questions. First, we go to Australia. David Nicholas, longtime listener and participant, asked a question. And he says, hi, Corali and Carly. What effects did December 21st, 2012 have on the age of Aquarius?
That's a great question. Thank you so much for sending that question in. So I guess I would say, first of all, that the December 21st, 2012 date came from calculations based on the Mayan calendar, and which is a different system. So it's actually pretty interesting that that date happened kind of early on, you know, within the first 100 years of the age of Aquarius, which is a Western astrological system. So, you know, it's the same cosmos, the same planets, but, you know, some of these different cultures had different ways of calculating. I believe, I don't know that much about the Mayan calendar, but I believe it's based more on the planet Venus and different things. So, yeah, I think it's just another testament to the fact that the cycle has completed. So the cycle completed for the Mayan calendar, December 21st, 2012, and the cycle completed in the age of Aquarius for the sidereal year, according to the calculations based in the sort of Greek Hellenistic astrology system that we generally use. So I think the same teachings apply. We're looking at a time of great change, of a catastrophe that will happen, you know, in some form or another, and we use this time of great force and change and energy to work. So to do our work, there's no excuse anymore to not just try to help each other and love each other, and there's no reason to just try to stay in our old ways of thinking and hatred and prejudice and all that. It's just to feel really inspired about that individual internal revolution. So I'm sorry I couldn't talk more about the Mayan calendar. That could be a really interesting topic for someone else on the show, I'm sure. But thank you again so much for your question.
And the next question, Carly, goes to Robert B. He writes to us via Gmail. Says, hi there, great talk. Just wondering, you mentioned that to fight the system is to feed the system, and it's better to fight the negative forces within. He's quoting you, and he says, could you talk about where the limit is with this approach? And there seem to be many things that the system could impose on society that could negatively impact our ability to do the esoteric work. Samael did also appear to be politically active for a time with a group fighting for a better work condition. Thank you, Robert B. from Melbourne, Australia.
Okay, that's also another great question. Thank you for asking that question. I would say that this, again, I would just emphasize that the work happens internally, and the most basic fundamental Gnostic teachings that we have is that the external is a reflection of our interior. So the oppressive systems, the problematic sort of government or corporate systems or everything that exists in our world are a reflection of what we carry within. And if we've been fortunate enough, blessed enough to be receiving these teachings and to be able to be in a group and have teachers and access to the books and all this, and to understand it and value it, we want to work to start to, you know, to really take, it's almost like a leap of faith inward, go deeper into our own being and find that source of the love and the virtues and the faith and the hope and the inspiration and that's the only way that anything external will ever change. So if there's a limit, I guess I would say there sort of isn't a limit to the internal work. If we've come across it, we've received it, and we value it, then, you know, things change that are astonishing. I am sort of constantly being astonished at what changes in my life when I just take that kind of relax and take that leap of faith inward and be with my being. And, you know, and there's sort of a type of thing that happens on the external line of life that I couldn't do just with my mind, or with an anger, or with an anger against the system, or anger against another person, or anything like that. So that's what I would say. I would say that's what this work is about. And I believe that Master Samael also came to that same conclusion, even though he did at one point, you know, sort of dabble in politics in that lifetime as Samael and Bjorn. He was physically a revolutionary in previous lifetimes, although he wasn't an esotericist in those lives. But he came to a revelation that that the way was through his Gnostic mission, and that's where he was going to make the greatest impact and create a genuine revolution. So that's what I have to say to that question, and thank you again for asking it.
And the last question comes from Florida. Elizabeth says, "We are living some interesting times. I was witness to the women's revolution that occurred in the 60s. Master Samael tells us that the first years of Aquarius would be to the feminine sexual organs. Now that the first 42 years have passed, can you tell us the transition and how it is that we will change our role in this modern world that we're living in today?"
Thank you. That is a good question. That's interesting. Yeah, I think with the teaching about the 42 years cycle of Uranus with the feminine pole and the masculine pole, it's always very interesting to me. And I think that's, again, I think it's one cycle within many, although I do think it's true. I do think that the past 42 years have seen, you know, just in a physical way, we've seen a lot of you know, the sort of the elevation of the feminine, or maybe the attempts. But you know, again, I think it just points to that true Uranian value the Uranian value of individuality. And, you know, and each person is equal. Each person has their own internal God. There's not sort of, you know, this external requirements really to do the work. So I think, you know, the Gnostic teachings have the male and the female as both elevated. Master Samael was, you know, wonderful and speaking so beautifully about the Divine Mother, you know, Divine Mother, the Divine Father, and, you know, and always having that balance of the masculine and the feminine. So, so even though the Uranus cycles through a masculine and feminine, you know, ebb and flow, and there's other cycles that sort of go through that, I think ultimately, again, with Aquarius, it's really about humanity and equality and inclusiveness and everybody just being able to work to their own capacity in whatever way that is. And it's, you know, it's different for everyone. So I think that's the main thing to really honor, to really understand about this age. So thank you. Thanks for the question.
Thank you. We don't have any more questions, so I guess this brings us to the end. You want to make any comments?
Just that it's been great to be on the show again. I really appreciate it. I really enjoy listening to all the other talks on the show. I can also, I guess, do a plug. I have a website called GnosticMuse.com, and so a lot of the things that I've spoken about, I have writings on there, and links to other schools around the United States and the people with blogs and things like that. So welcome to check that out. You can also contact me through there. So if anyone, you know, has any inspiration or any other questions, you're always welcome to contact me that way. So yeah, just thank you all so much.
GnosticMuse.com?
GnosticMuse, M-U-S-E.
Thanks for clearing that up.
Sure.
Okay, Carly. Well, it was wonderful having you back. Thank you for the topic and the interesting talk. We'll invite you to come back whenever you wish. So okay. It's an open invitation.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Okay. So there you have it, folks. Konami Radio, the Astrological Ages, and the New Era of Aquarius. Soon available in download, and we'll be playing next month on our daily program. Until next time, take care and reverential peace.